This is CKLU 96.7, and I'm Hugh Cruzell, and this is Eat This, Drink That. Hello, everyone. We're just out here in the countryside, and it's an opportunity to check in with somebody who grows food that maybe you will eat. I don't know. Certainly some of her colleagues will eat. You have all kinds of things growing. Cucurbits, you have some basil, scallions, green peppers. Here they are in lemonade containers even. What are you growing?
I'm growing a wide variety of vegetables, brassicas, tomatoes, like the nightshades, all the squash type, zucchini, cucumbers, and some herbs as well, onions, alliums. Yeah.
Well, and these are for your family?
Yes,
somewhat. Primarily.
Somewhat. But I am starting a business called Off the Beaten Path, B-E-E, apostrophe T-N, because I also have honeybees. Uh-huh. And that business is focused on selling garlic and honey.
Together. Garlic honey. No, I'm just
kidding. that's the value added later on.
But so your intention is to grow the land or you know the amount of space you're growing things in, or to grow the quantity or variety of things?
Probably a bit of both.
A bit of both?
Yeah.
And you say you're going to be selling at some point in time.
I'm hoping to sell some garlic and honey this year, come August, September, around there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, garlic is a wonderful, it's a huge, people are, I know there's a big garlic market outside Carp, or in Carp, outside Ottawa. Are you planning on growing several varieties of garlic?
Yes, indeed. I'm in the process of expanding that. Right now, music is the main variety that I grow.
Is it spelt the regular way?
Just like music, just like it sounds.
Yes.
Yep. And I've expanded to some different types, which will take a year or two to grow those, cultivate them. Ertesk, Hungarian, Newfoundland, Jumbo, Yugoslavian. And I will...
Well, you should grow only Hungarian, because where are we right now?
134 Hungarian Road.
I didn't even know there was a Hungarian Road here. I did, actually. But,
yeah,
but it should be spelled Mayar.
we're definitely off the beaten path here, hence the name.
Yes. And how long have you been here on the land?
6 years.
6 years. And was that always the intention, to go towards a process that would grow food for people and sell food to people?
I just like to garden, and it's kind of expanded into that. Mm-hmm. My husband likes to chop wood, and so we principally heat with firewood, so he likes to be out in the bush doing that, so it's kind of a dual purpose here.
How many acres do you actually have here?
67.
67, well, that should give you lots of wood, and lots of, but you've got, was it originally a farm out here?
Yes, it was, actually.
So this is, you're reclaiming something that's a heritage piece of the Sudbury landscape.
I suppose. I never thought of it that way.
I wonder if it was a dairy farm or beef farm or...
I don't know. When you get out into the thick of the bush, and there's a swamp out there with a beaver lodge, and you could see the fencing going right through the swamp. So at some point, the cattle grazed.
Yes. Yes, of course. But you're not doing cattle. You're only going to do vegetables.
Vegetables. Maybe some chickens at some point.
Oh, chickens. I heard a report just recently on CBC that the amount of land devoted to farming in the Sudbury area is increasing. And so you're part of that trend.
I'm glad to hear it.
We'll have a look around at some of the other pieces that are part of the property here. Before we do, I just want to capture the green peppers that are coming. Look at that. How many will you grow? And are these Hungarian?
No, they're different varieties of peppers. There's some hot ones, medium hot, and then just regular sweet green peppers.
In Hungary, they hang the peppers outside to dry. They do also in New Mexico and in Arizona. Very traditional thing to do. Very leathery looking, beautiful, though. High in vitamin C, which is something I didn't expect.
Red peppers, yes, they are.
So you're doing also really increasing the health of Sudburyans.
We'll start here at home first, but yes.
So the plants start in the house at a certain temperature. Do you warm their bottoms? Which sounds funny, but...
No, I don't, actually. That room is pretty warm, and it gets a lot of light.
Mm-hmm. Well, the soil needs, for some plants, especially things like peppers, doesn't need a little extra boost of heat?
Maybe, but I don't.
Warm.
I don't. It's pretty warm in there, yeah.
And so once they've started in larger quantities of flats, you then transplant them and then bring them out here. What's going on out here?
So I have this shelf, which has this kind of, it's like a welding curtain. to protect it from the wind, and I put them on here to harden off. So that's a process. That takes a couple weeks. They have to get used to the sunlight.
Because it's much harsher than the
inside environment. Yes. Yeah, it's not as controlled. So, you know, you do it gradually. Ideally, it should be gradually, like a couple hours a day. But because I work full time, they go out in the morning and then they come in at night, as long as it's above zero temperatures.
Do you have to whistle for them for them to come in at night?
We bring them in. Again, it's a process, but I get help from my family.
Think about it, actually. You know, they are dependent on us, and we are dependent on them.
Right? Exactly.
I mean, no feet to move around. Tomatoes. Tomatoes, one of the less hardy crops here in Northern Ontario.
Yeah, they always go in a greenhouse.
Varieties. Big thing, right?
Yep.
Do we know what we've got here? Or these last year's seed save?
Well, it's a bit of both. I have some, there's plum tomatoes, there's some cherry tomatoes, there's some black crims. It's a whole variety.
Yeah, I see that you've labeled them all. You're smarter than I am because I tend to think, oh, I'll remember which ones I put here.
And I didn't label them very well this year, so I am struggling a little bit with, oh, what was that? I made a map instead of putting a sticker right on them.
Yes.
And I won't do that again. I'll put stickers because stickers are better. Huh. These are from last year, these stickers.
Oh, is that? That's what they are? Oh, no.
So I have a pretty good idea what most of it is, but I have to go to my little map, which when you start moving things inside the flats, then you start losing track of, oh, which peppers were these?
Now, tomatoes come in as determinates and indeterminates. What have you grown?
I think it's the indeterminates. I like the
open pollinated. So they go crazy. They get big.
You can control them. You just have to cut them back, which I already have.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, I had to.
So how many weeks old would these ones be?
Well, some I actually started as early as February, which I probably shouldn't have, but I wasn't sure the seeds were any good, and that's why I started that early.
Just in case you would have to reseed.
That's right. So March, pretty
but
much.
But you know how that works always, right?
They'll if you grow plant like crazy.
Right. If you put, do you think, oh, my God, I should put two seeds in each thing because I don't think it's going to be successful, and then you end up with two.
I'm glad I'm not the only one that does that. No. Yeah, so I started them in March, most of them, other than the great big tall ones, or February.
Oh, my goodness, yes, you got more down there.
Yeah.
And is this a good day for them to be out?
It's above zero. It's okay.
Oh, I meant in terms of the light, because I know I would be my own world. I didn't want to put them out yesterday in the full sun.
Yeah, so this is actually probably a really good day to have them out, because it's that cloudy sort of diffuse light, right?
Mm-hmm. Very BC today.
Yeah, it is. But they'll get hardier.
Now, you're out here in the countryside. Do you worry about diseases and things like that? Probably not as big an issue as if you had a farm right next door with contaminants or GMOs and all of such. You're kind of like in a little spot,
a little paradise.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't worry about GMOs because I don't think there's anybody really farming.
Proximal to you, nearby?
Not really. Not really. And I think
and you're not growing corn.
I did one year, and the raccoons sacked it, so that was it.
That's the challenge out here in the countryside. You mentioned bears.
Yep.
Raccoons, what else?
Oh, I'm sure there's... you have beavers. We have beavers, and although they...
Do they eat corn? Or are they just...
I don't know.
Well, let's go and explore some more of the farm. You've got rain barrels.
I do. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 catching rain right now around the house, and we have such a steep pitched roof that we get quite a bit off of that. So it works very well. So we take the water in the rain barrels, and we pump it up to a tote, which is behind the greenhouse, which you can't see from here, but it's a 1,000-liter tote.
It can be very dry and droughty here in Sudbury. There can be long extended periods of no rain. Do you ever feel the pressure of, like, you can hear the plants screaming for drink?
A little bit, yeah, and that's where we rely on the old well to water the plants with that. But it's never sufficient to totally, like, a good rain. You can't beat a good rain.
Have you ever thought of putting a pond in?
I did.
Oh, you did put a pond in.
No, I haven't, but I did think about it, and I would like to someday. There's a perfect spot right here where the land... Kind
yes,
of concaves there, yeah. The water comes through a little creek. It dries up in the summer, but yeah, I suppose if we had a pond, that would be kind of nice.
I think like anything, like even a regular ecosystem, if you have a number of ways of getting around things, coping with things, that each one would help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, indeed. Like like I said, everything's a process, so it takes time.
Well, and you're growing food in local soil. Why not use local water, I guess, that's been sun warm? Many people start with cold frames. Did you start with that out here in the countryside?
I did. I started with a couple of them, and those two that are near my compost area originally started in the garden. And then over time, we decided, well, we really need a greenhouse because you need a season extender here in Sudbury because you get potentially frost in June and September. So in order to try and circumvent that a little bit longer, so we built these greenhouses.
Yeah, because many tomatoes require 80 days, 90 days, 110 days. Certainly watermelons, 110. Do you grow watermelons?
No, I don't grow watermelons, but I actually have started some muskmelons inside. Ah. So I want to try those this year.
And what would be the temperature outside typically and then inside the greenhouse? That's a big difference probably.
It is. It is. It can get as high as 40 degrees, which is a little too warm. But I do have some solar-powered fans inside.
Solar-powered fans. That's fantastic.
Yeah. Well, you can see the solar panels there.
Yeah, I can.
And we'll go inside the greenhouse shortly, and you'll see the fans. We have two that are pushing air in and two that are taking air out. It's a drip irrigation system that I'm going to use from the barrels.
Well, the barrels themselves must be kind of like a heat source. They retain all that heat during the day and let it off during the night. That's another big issue, isn't it? It's that diurnal variation that we have here in Sudbury.
And it keeps the water warm, so it's not so shocking for the plants, right? Especially in the greenhouse because it's so warm in there.
Oh, do I hear partridge out there?
Yes, you do.
I hear lots of things. You were mentioning about fencing. You've got fencing around here. Who's it for? Is it to keep things in or out?
A bit of both. It helps keep our dogs contained, and it keeps wild animals out for the most part.
Wild animals?
Well, you've got bears. Bears could crash it if they want. And, you know, moose. I think moose are generally kind of would rather not deal with the fence if they don't have to.
Well, we haven't made it to the greenhouse. We got distracted by garlic. What's going on with garlic? How much have you got?
Probably about 100 feet, maybe. 75 to 100 feet, three rows.
Three rows. How many? Three rows, double rows. Three. Oh, I see. How
so times three.
Times three.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of an economic crop. That's a cash crop, isn't it?
I hope so.
People are very into garlic.
Yeah, they are here, and with the Garlic Festival. I'm hoping next year I'll be able to attend the Garlic Festival. That's my plan. I ordered some garlic from Richter's Herbs, so I'm going to also grow, in addition to the ones I mentioned before, I'm going to grow German Mennonite, Siberian, and Killarney Red.
Now, you've got some herbs and other things. I mean, you've got some things that are going to feed our feathered friends as well along here. I see some sunflowers and...
Yeah, they just come up naturally now. I think they're just kind of reseeding themselves, so I just let them grow. I like them. They look nice.
You've got strawberries.
I do. I'm pretty new to strawberries. I only started them last year.
We used to put straw down underneath the strawberries to keep them nice and so they wouldn't get dirty. The rain wouldn't splash up, but it was just to lift them a little bit. I think it also kept the ground a little cooler, perhaps.
Yeah.
And what have you got going on? You're growing some tires over there. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm just trying to get rid of that grass, but you can see there's a whole pile of grass under it, so it really didn't do anything.
This method, the plastic method, is very common in agriculture these days in a method to prepare the ground for seeding.
Mm-hmm. Well, if I can do less work as I get older, all the better.
There is never less work out on the farm, trust me.
I believe that.
There's always something that needs to be fixed, something that's broken, and if it's not broken, it needs to be replaced or on a regular scheduled maintenance, or it'll break tomorrow.
Yeah.
Or paint. Don't you have to paint everything that's moving? You leave you oil everything that just doesn't move. You paint.
I have a husband who's really handy, so he helps out with all of the machinery. We don't have huge amounts of machinery.
No, rototiller.
Yeah, and we have a snowblower in the winter to keep the snow off the...
off the garlic.
So it doesn't pile up along the greenhouse.
Oh, I imagine that could be a disaster.
Well, it
the weight of snow.
Yeah, it can get heavy, especially with the ice and the ice that we get around here.
How many years would you get out of a greenhouse skin? Is that what you'd call it?
Yeah. It's a 6 mil, I think, 5 or 6 mils.
I had a greenhouse years ago, and it was so much so that the things were growing. That they were, if there was a small tear or rip, or they'd actually grow underneath the sill, and you'd find tomatoes. I measured the vine one time. I think it was 36 feet, and it just kept reaching and reaching. I thought it was like Day of the Triffids.
Well, A good hoe will keep that kind of under control somewhat.
We're actually inside the greenhouse now, where it's really super pleasant, and there's no rain dripping on us. The temperature, have a nice day, Canada Dry, says it's 18 degrees in here. Thermometers, a great idea. You mentioned it gets to 40 degrees Celsius in here?
Yeah, it does. It gets pretty warm on a hot, sunny day.
Now, right now, is your greenhouse resting? You won't grow tomatoes in here yet.
Not yet. The buckwheat's going to get plowed under once it gets just before it flowers. We're going to plow it under.
You've got rows and rows of buckwheat here. How many pounds of buckwheat seed did you use to get this?
I didn't use very much. I bought 5 pounds, and that'll last me for a few years yet. I planted it last year, and I put it in the garden after the garlic was taken up, and it grows like
weed.
Crazy. Yeah, it does. Yes. It does, and it's nice. So we'll see. I'm very curious to see how things grow where I planted it last year.
Well, buckwheat is one of those amazing crops that pulls nutrients from down below and then, as you mentioned, enriches it with nitrogen and just opens the soil up.
Yeah.
Is this common practice to use buckwheat in a greenhouse or in your kind of small scale farm as a tool rather than chemical intervention or anything like that?
Oh yeah, no, I don't like fertilizers. I like to keep everything organic and natural. So I also have a big pile of Spanish River carbonatite under tarps outside.
Yes,
I use that as well. I really like that.
Oh, that's like crack for your farm.
I've never thought of it that way, but sure, if you like.
It is, yeah. Stuart McCall was marketing that.
Yeah, he's
by
big
the
into
fun.
That.
Yeah, it does make a difference. I tried one teaspoon in sun-warmed water and used that repeatedly on an area, compared it to the other area. Maybe there was other things going on, but it was a significant difference.
Yep.
Micronutrients.
Mm-hmm. For sure, yeah.
Do you grow buckwheat for the bees, too?
No, actually.
Do the bees do wild foraging mostly here?
Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't really talk about the bees yet.
Not
You've
yet.
Got bees.
Yeah, there. If we walk out this door, you'll see the apiary. It's
no apes in the apiary.
Yeah, I only have 3 hives right now, but I am going to split the hives this year. I'm hoping to double the amount.
Double the amount of bees. They work for you. You've got a device over here that's you're using for the farm to do some. Weeding? I don't know. Or
weeding,
soil preparation?
Weeding, cultivating, plowing. Actually, it does have like a 2-furrowed plow on it.
What would we call this device?
That is a Haas hoe wheel, I guess is what you'd call it. Haas is a manufacturer, made in the U.S., high quality. It's a really good machine. You just have to put the manpower behind it. But
So there's no engine in this? It's
Just me. And if you wanted...
That's why you're so well put together.
Something like that. And if you were to, and that was the thing I said to my friend at work, I said, if you and I did a 50-foot row, you're going to hoe it, and I'm going to use this, I got 20 minutes to kill while I'm waiting for you to finish. It's quick. It's not designed to start a field, but certainly once the ground is broken, it's great to maintain it.
And you'd be able to use this between the rows as you...
Right in there. It was done this morning.
Really?
Yep.
Ancient device, probably.
I would think so. It's pretty basic theory behind it, for sure.
Agriculture, 10,000, 16,000 years, and here we are in 2017. Do you think small-scale farmers have a future in Canada?
Oh, absolutely. I think there's more and more people are getting more aware of what they don't know is in their food.
And so they're paying attention to it, and they'll come to you, or they'll grow things in their own backyard.
Sure, yeah, either. I mean, you know, it'd be great if they came here, but
or community gardens.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah.
Can you tell us who you are? I've been interviewing you. Kindly,
yes.
You've been giving me
Tom DeLong, the other half of Adele's adventure.
Here out here on Hungarian Road in way far east of Sudbury. Tom, do you see yourself as part of like a farm tour eventually, where people will come around or CSAs? The
CSA Adele looked into a little bit. A couple of years ago, and I don't know that we've got enough tilled ground yet to really do that. Mm-hmm. But certainly the farm tour idea, and it's an interesting place.
Well,
it's
certainly the garlic would put you on the map.
That's what we're hoping for.
And honey.
Yeah, well.
Together.
Absolutely.
Again.
Yes.
And do some baked goods, and everybody will want to come.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Oh, you're quite welcome. Thank you.
But I will increase this, hopefully, to 5 or 6 hives this year. That's the plan.
Where did you learn to do bee stuff?
Learn by doing. And I'm
Is there a heritage in your family of doing this?
Not that I know of. But I am a member of the Sudbury and District Beekeepers Association.
There's an association?
Absolutely.
How many people?
Actually,
hundreds.
Quite a few.
Thousands.
You know what? 50 plus anyway, because since I've joined, I've seen the numbers increase, and it's amazing. And they offer a couple of workshops in June for beginner beekeepers.
I'm going to have to admit, I've always wanted to.
Well, you'll have to come out sometime when it's not raining.
You have a little electric fence here, solar powered, a little deep cycle battery probably, just to keep who away?
Keep the big bad bears away.
Yeah, because they know what's going on here, right?
Well, yeah, they can smell it. They have such an amazing sense of smell. So we just need to give them a little shock to say, no, you're not allowed.
There is some movement. I've noticed a few heading in and out.
Yeah, that's my little more aggressive hive, so you don't want to get too close to that one.
Well, you've got different colors here. I've never noticed that hives are particularly more than one color, but you got purple and pink. That's very cool.
I was trying to match the purple color, actually, but it ended up being pink. So it'll eventually become all
now,
pink.
These are, what do we call each of the boxes that are there?
Okay, well, I've got, the bigger, the taller boxes are called brood boxes, and that's where the queen lays the eggs, and that's where they take care of the baby bees, I guess, for lack of a better word. And then the smaller boxes on top are the supers.
It's a little, where the honey's going to be.
Yeah, it's a little early for them right now, but I just did not want a spring swarm, so I did put.
There's a lot to learn about bees.
There is, actually.
Maybe what they can teach us.
That too. If people worked the way bees work, we wouldn't have the problems that we have. That's what I think. I really believe that.
Between, like, interpersonal problems and things like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. They work for the common good. It's all about the queen and all about the whole group, the whole hive. It works as one unit. Mm. Yeah, they're amazing.
I have to ask you about the electric fence. If I touched it, what would I get?
Get zapped. And it's wet today, right? Do you have rubber on?
I've got my mining boots on.
No, I wouldn't touch it. But if you want.
You've got a little container of rocks there. What's that about?
I'm eventually going to put a fountain here.
Oh, and the bees would love this?
Well, then it kind of recycles the water, right? So they get their drinks from that, and that's why I have that there. But it's...
How many years have you been doing this?
I'm in my third year now.
And have you had results?
I had a little bit of honey last year, but I made some mistakes. So I'm hoping my plan this year, because I do want to sell my honey, is to not make any more mistakes and get some honey from them.
Well, is this the right spot for this?
This is a beautiful location because there are no GMOs, not anywhere near any farmers' fields. The bees forage within 3 miles of where they're stationed here.
Right, there's no farm near here, right?
That's right, and if there are, it's horse farms, so it's all pretty natural. And
there's horse flies for that.
Yeah.
Not bees.
There's lots of wildflowers here,
oh yeah,
and of course they get pollen from the trees and the grasses. And
yes.
Yeah, it's
there hasn't
a
been
spot.
A burn around here at all, has there?
No.
Thank goodness, fireweed makes beautiful honey.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But you're right, there's wild cherries, there's a lot of things that we don't notice in the wild, the small flowers.
Mm-hmm.
And dandelions and all kinds of things. So
yeah, we have...
What was the color like of the honey that you got?
It was quite yellowy.
Yellow.
But it as the season progresses, goldenrod's a little darker, so that's where they'll get a lot of their pollen.
No, you have to overwinter them somewhere. Where do they overwinter?
Right here.
Right here? And you just sort of wrap them up and give them parkas?
Something like that. I wrap them in tar paper and... I tried these. You'll see those things along
the
neck.
Just a minute. It's -40 out there sometimes. These can survive?
They can, as long as you have a large cluster. They say it's not the cold that kills them, it's the wet that kills them. So that's what I'm told, and I do tend to believe that. Although we had a pretty mild winter this last couple of years, right? And as long as they have enough food, they can get at it. The tar paper, when the sun is out on a really cold day, it heats, so then they can move around and get to the honey stores that they've put away. That's the theory.
Well, it looks like they'd be happy here. So really, you've got 4 hives.
One's empty,
but you're going to split them when?
If we ever get some warmer weather.
Oh.
I have a couple queens on order. So
and the queen comes all alone, or they come with a few?
I think he throws a couple workers in there with her, so she's not alone. And then what I'll do is I'll take some...
It comes by mail or by...
I think I'm going to go pick them up, but it can come by mail.
Or by Ontario Northland bus? Or
I think it's Canada Post. I don't know if it might freak out the people at the post office, but you never know.
No, I bet you they're used to getting things like that because, you know, I mean, that's how everything used to come at one time.
Yeah, true.
You've got a lot of other things. Here you've got your collection, water collection system, I see.
Yeah,
You use gravity, then.
Yeah, it is gravity-fed, so... Where the rain barrels were around the house, we'll pump that up into the tote. And that's 1,000 liters. So then the tote then helps water the greenhouses. That's basically what I use it for, sometimes for the garden, but I don't like to use it too much for the garden, simply because I'd rather just have the rainwater do that.
Mm. And what does the tarps are just there to cover things up for the winter?
Yeah, we just haven't uncovered them yet.
No, it's been a slow start to the season, hasn't it? Mm-hmm. We've been very fortunate in some ways. It gives us some room to fix things.
For sure. But I would like it a little warmer, at least for the bees, so they can get out and do what they need to do.
Well, I want to say thank you very much for the time out here in a farm, a real working farm, that, you know, as you move towards monetizing some of the activities you do out here. Adele DeLong, thank you very much for your time, and thank you to your husband, Tom, as well, for inviting out to the farm.
You're very welcome. Thank you for your interest.
A lot of people are finding that really we have to cooperate with things better. I noticed in planting some trees the other day, they were using mushroom juice to help with the... And what are you doing right now?
So I'm stirring my compost tea. So what I've done...
Compost tea? That's not real tea, is it?
You wouldn't want to drink this, but I think the soil really likes it.
What actually is in there?
So what I've done is... You get a burlap bag, and this is compost here that sat in that composter for last year, decomposed. So I filled the bag with the new compost, and then put it in the barrel, and filled the barrel with rainwater.
Basically, you're creating a microbiological soup, really.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there must be, I don't even know. I read somewhere that there's a million organisms within a single teaspoon of soil. You must have, you've got more than the whole world in there.
I don't know. I've not done this before, so I'm trying it as an experiment because I have some soil in front of the greenhouse that needs a little bit of a boost.
And this will increase, I guess nutrient uptake. It'll increase the size and then the production of the plants.
Absolutely, that's the plan. I've heard compost tea works wonders.